Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores. Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect to your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Hello. How you doing? Welcome along to Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. It is lovely to be in your company. How has your weekend been? I'm recording this on a Sunday evening, just put the Christmas tree up. Yes! I made a Christmas wreath with my friend Gemma yesterday whilst we listened to Christmas songs. I'm ready for it. I want to embrace it. I'm stepping into Christmas. Maybe you're not. That's fine. We're running a little competition, actually, thinking of ourselves as our very own little Father Christmas, in that we have 5 vinyl copies and 5 CD copies of Johnny Greenwood's score for One Battle After Another to give away. So if you'd like to win one of those as a little Christmas present from us to you, or maybe you want to give it to someone else, then you need to head over to our socials. We're at Soundtracking UK. And I've done I think it's quite funny, little video on how you could win yourself a copy of either vinyl or CD. So head over to our Soundtracking UK socials on Instagram to find out how you could win. And good luck. I hope you enjoy my little video. Anyway, our latest guest on the podcast. I'm really thrilled about this because we had the chance to speak to the composers. When did we speak to Kyle and Michael? That was ages ago. I think I actually say it in the interview, but it's so nice to have the Duffer brothers, Matt and Ross, the guys who created this whole epic Netflix sensation, on the show to talk about it. You know, it's there. They've just entered its 5th and final season, and I'm sure you're well aware that it's drawn to a close, which is really sad, but it's been a hell of a journey, hasn't it? To summarise very briefly, for those of you who have not stepped into the Stranger Things world, it tells the story of a kind of young group of friends in the 80s in Indiana who encounter supernatural forces and expose secret government exploits. As they search for answers, the children unravel a series of extraordinary mysteries. And one of the things that's been, I think, so great about this show is that every season has had a kind of different feel to it. It's had a different focus. But one thing that's been constant throughout that is the wonderful music that's been scored by Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein, but also the needle drops. I'm sure you're aware there's been so many great choices in that. And I think that it's just a show that I kind of have really enjoyed going back and watching again. My youngest got recently into it, and so he went back to the start and watched it right through and then proceeded to watch every single kind of piece of footage that you could find online, like, let's dissect the teaser trailer. So I've been fully immersed in this world. I mean, fully, for the last couple of months. So as I said, Stranger Things is scored by Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein. Where better to begin than with their iconic opening theme?
Music with you guys, if that's all right.
Of course,
I mean, this, I had the pleasure of chatting to Michael and Kyle for season 3, which was amazing. It was great to just kind of dive in with them and their
amazing
journey.
Yeah.
But their music goes way back to the start with you, even before we saw anything. You know, your kind of sizzle was soundtracked by their band's music, which is,
that's right,
which is awesome. What was it about that music that was inspiring for you, or that was felt part of the characters in the show?
You know, we got really excited by the idea of using synth music for the show, and it started out from almost like a practical point of view, because so much of the show was harkening back to, you know, classic Spielberg films. But we went, well, we can't, whoever we get, we're not going to be able to top John Williams, and it's always going to feel like we're just aping John Williams, and it's going to feel second run. And so then we started thinking about John Carpenter and going synth. And when we were making that sizzle reel, we tried some, I think it was from The Fog, over awesome shots from E.T. And suddenly it just completely changed the tone of E.T. in a way that we thought was very, very cool.
It's not that hard to make E.T. scary, though.
No.
You know, E.T.
yeah,
is
totally.
But any level of horror music over E.T. turns it into a horror film.
But especially John Carpenter's synth over,
yeah,
you know,
it was cool.
Spooky, foggy shots of a shed and Elliot looking out. It was, we were like, this is, I think we're on to something here. So as we continued working on that sizzle, what John Carpenter didn't give us, which was the initial concept, but he didn't have anything that had a big climactic build to it for the end of our trailer. And so we started looking at synth composers, modern synth composers, and it's actually a pretty small group of them.
Yeah.
There's not a ton. And that's how we stumbled on Kyle and Michael's music on the soundtrack to The Guest. And when we put it down, it was synth still, and it still fit within the tone of what we wanted to do synth-wise, but
yeah,
it gave it this climactic build.
Well, but it was both old school and new school, I mean, you
yeah
know, which is what we were trying to do with the show. It's like, okay, you know, you want to pay kind of homage and take all these lessons from and evoke the feeling of those older films, but also take it to a new place, and
yeah,
that's what Michael and Kyle's music did.
That's an amazing thought, though, isn't it? If you think about all your favourite films, and if you re-scored them,
yeah,
how the experience would be So different.
Music is, I think, one of the most powerful tools you have when you're working. I mean, we spend so long on the music and getting the music just right, and it can completely transform a scene. It can make a bad scene great. It can make a great scene bad if you choose the wrong piece of music, and it can completely transform the tone. You know, I watched this documentary on John Williams. Did you see that? It's good.
The recent one.
Yeah, the recent one.
Beautiful.
But it was interesting how he was talking about however Spielberg temped, you know, Jaws, and it was temped much more like a straight horror film. And John Williams saw it as an adventure film, and it, you know, completely changed that film.
Yeah, absolutely. Thinking back now, you know, to where we are with this final season of this show that is just adored by so many. And I've just had the luxury of rewatching the entire thing with my 12-year-old.
Oh, excellent.
Who is obsessed. I had to like leave the house extra early this morning, or he was literally going to attach himself to me to come and meet you guys. So Spike says hi.
Oh, you should have brought him.
Spike says hi. You've inspired a very...
Oh, I love his name, Spike.
Yeah. You know, and the way that it's still, you know, inspiring people and catching on to people that, you know, maybe were too young when it first was released.
Yeah.
But thinking back now to when you started and how important music was for you guys when you were writing that first season, and where you thought music fitted with the show and the characters, both in terms of the score that the guys were going to create, but also we're going to use needle drops. We see needle drops as being a really important part of the story and how to tell the story. Were you thinking about that way back then?
We didn't realize that needle drops, that was going to be as important, or that the show would be as known for those as it was. Because Ross and I mean, to be honest, when we were growing up, we mostly listened to movie soundtracks.
Yeah.
So if you quiz us on movie soundtracks, we're much more knowledgeable on that front. But a lot of those needle drops were written into the scripts. Like, obviously, we knew The Clash was going to play an important part of the narrative. You know, Joy Division was written to the show. So a lot of that was written into the narrative. And I think that's something that we try to do with it. We don't want to just put in a song for fun. We want it to... Sometimes we do.
Yeah.
But mostly we try to make sure that it's either story-driven or character-driven. And I think the songs that have been most successful have fallen into that category.
To let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go?
Can songs sometimes like help with leading something, whether it's, I don't know, kind of get into the core of a character sometimes, or an internalization or something at times.
Exactly, yeah. And obviously sort of something that we started playing with really, I mean, on season one really with Will singing the song to sort of comfort himself from the Upside Down. We carried that forward into season two when they used the song in order to reach into actually and talk to Will when he was possessed in a way by the Mind Flayer. And then all that sort of culminated to the idea of Max and the Kate Bush running up that hill scene. So I think for us, when it's most effective, it's doing both the things that Matt was talking about, where it is telling you something about this character and it's tied into the narrative, as opposed to just going, you know, like sometimes we do, we'll have a scene and we'll like this, you know, a song could make this better, and we'll just listen to 30 different songs over it and see what's the right vibe. Yeah. But generally that's not how we do it. Generally it's thinking about the character and the script and the narrative and trying to find the perfect song for that moment.
I imagine as well, kind of compared to then and now, you've just got artists throwing their songs at you. Whereas I imagine it's, you know, it's an expensive business getting, you know, kind of clearance on songs and stuff. And
yeah, it's gotten easier for sure. Especially post-Kate Bush. Yeah. That's when we started to have bands offering us some songs
for free. Something.
Yeah, yeah, which was really cool. And there were some bands that we love that we you know, but you just can't. There's not a good space for them. You know, we couldn't figure out how to get some of the songs into the show. So at the end of the day, you have to put in what's right for the story.
This is going to go out after the first episode's gone out as well. So there's a little kind of section I want. I love kind of Robin and her DJ. That's just such a great. It's a brilliant idea, and it just fits the character, and it just adds a really lovely tone to that first episode.
Yeah.
And, you know, the kind of the records, Rockin' Robin, and then Upside Down, genius, you know, kind of. It's those little kind of chuckles that you kind of have with those moments of, like, respite before we know we're going to get into a kind of slightly more kind of sinister action sort of part of it as well.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, I don't know, were you kind of want to be DJs growing up as well in terms of that kind of, you know, we've all kind of played records and pretended at some point that we've wanted to.
I don't know if we ever wanted to be DJs. I think that more came out of us, I mean, seeing how much music is important in the show and the power of music. So it made sense that for our character's new hangout spot or hideout spot, however you want to say, that it was a DJ booth, and that using music again as a narrative device to communicate with one another fit thematically with everything. And then Maya Hawk also has a great DJ
voice.
Good.
Yeah.
She's a natural.
You wanted to give her like a good morning Vietnam type feel. And that, like, so some of it's just like, that's fun. Like, let's give Maya that opportunity because we know she's going to knock it out of the park, which she did.
Yeah, I had that cassette and I played it bare, that Good Morning Vietnam cassette.
So good.
All those
so
Robin good. Williams. I love that they had that as part of the soundtrack.
Yes.
The leads into this. It's just amazing.
Yes.
God, she so is. It's such a great comparable, for sure. Going back to the score, though, in terms of the different kind of tones that the show has at moments, you know, comedy at times, action at times, romance at times as well, that's a lot of an ask of composers in terms of the different types of music that you want them to create for the show, but it's all gotta fit and flow.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, sometimes I remember, especially as we moved into the third season, which has a lot more comedy in it, we had to, or I'm acting like I had to do this, it was really Kyle and Michael had to figure out what does, you know, comedic synth sound like. There were almost no examples of it. You know, I mean, you had Beverly Hills Cop. I don't remember. There was very little Fletch.
Very, very little, though.
To reference. And none of that sounds like their style of music. So, you know, they spent a long time trying to figure out what that sound was. So the horror atmospheric stuff, that's in their pocket. That's really easy. And finding sounds that are very sort of the emotional beats. Like, how do you hit these really heavy emotional beats?
Without strings.
Without strings, exactly, or in piano is challenging. That in the comedy. But they've done a brilliant job finding that sound, I think.
Recognized it on that first episode was the way that music can transition as well, help in terms of, you know, those, it's almost like watching what I remember watching TV shows when I was, you know, kind of little, as they went from kind of one scene to the next.
Yeah.
And rather than it just being a cut, the music almost helps as a kind kind of sort of almost like a little guide, a musical guide into the from there to there sort of thing as well.
This is why I hated working on network television, because you can't do that because you go to commercial. So not always, but often you go to commercial, and we like using the music to transition from one scene to the next. That's why our show doesn't work super well in the ad supported.
I don't know if we're supposed to say that. I think it works great.
It's better to pay for the full Netflix package. So you get that nice flow.
Don't miss out on any of those beautiful musical transitions.
Yeah, exactly. You're losing out on it. Don't do it.
But I think what we've also been having fun with, especially as we get into later episodes of the season, maybe it's just on my mind because we're working on the final episode right now, is having not just music to guide over, but have like music that just carries from one scene to the next. Because when we have, especially in the later episodes, we have a lot of storylines going on, and it can be jarring, or music can kind of just make it all flow together as one. You know, Chris Nolan's really good at that, where it just, there's just a propulsion to it that allows you to do something that's pretty complicated in terms of cross-cutting, in terms of the amount of narratives going on, and it makes it all feel like a cohesive whole.
I would say I think when we're editing, at least 50% of our time is spent on music, at least. That's as important as how the scenes edit together. I mean, the two really play hand in hand. And I think it's absolutely essential.
I'm kind of slightly blown away by the fact that you just said that you're working on the final episode.
Yeah.
Right now. I'm like, what are you doing here?
What are we doing? What are we doing? Well, first of all, we have till New Year's Eve. So, like, Ross and I are definitely...
But you've got Christmas in between.
Yeah, exactly. No, we're almost done. We just have to do a little bit of sound, a little bit of color, and a little bit of visual effects.
And music. We still have some
and
cues.
Music.
Oh, yeah, Michael still have a few cues that they owe
us. You know,
guys,
2 hours long. You know, so that's a lot of music. So the guys have to, even it helps that there are two of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a lot of music that they have to write. It's almost wall to wall, too. So it's, I don't know how much music, and it's probably at least an hour and a half worth of it. So that's a lot. That's a lot to compose. Luckily, though, it's not all original. I mean, one of the fun things we've found about this season is we're trying to pull from all the other seasons. So there's a lot of cues from season one. So I don't know how many hours. They'll know how many hours they've composed, but it's obscene. It's obscene.
How does it feel like, you know, you're working on that final episode? Yeah. This has been such a huge part of your life, and the response that it has had around the world, and the idea that it's, that you're kind of putting it to bed.
I mean, we were just
not there yet.
Talking to the cast last night, and we're kind of all in the same spot where we're not really dealing with it emotionally. We know we're going to have to come New Year's Day, but while we still got press, while we're still working on it, it's like, what do you mean it's not over? We still got time.
Right, we're still all hanging out as a group. And Ross and I will continue working on the final episode until Netflix says,
stop!
The release is in jeopardy, and then, which is what happened with the first four episodes.
Wow.
We took it all the way up to where it started to get risky, and then we had to let them go.
How was it writing it, though? You know, in terms of kind of you're writing these characters in this story, in this world that you've created.
It's mostly stressful writing. I think, for me, it's the most difficult part of the process because the possibilities are so infinite. You know, I mean, when you get into editing, even if you've made mistakes, you just have these puddled, it's shot, so you have a limited amount of, I mean, there's a lot that you can do, but not as much as you can do in sort of writing. You have to work with what you have. So writing is really challenging. Writing the final episode was hard, though, on an emotional level because you're writing these characters for the last time. So, you know, at a certain point, you get to Dustin's last line, you get to Steve's last line, you get to Eleven's last line. And, you know, at the end of it, I remember writing end series as opposed to end season, and that hit pretty hard. That hit pretty hard.
When you started it, did you have it carved out as to where it would end and how, you know, that you would have five seasons? What was the one or the dream at the start with this?
The dream was, I mean, we just couldn't believe we were allowed to make a television show. So there was not, when we were making that first season, there wasn't a lot of thought, honestly, put into that this was going to be a long-running show.
Yeah.
It was originally pitched as a limited series, and then we heard prior to going into Netflix that they didn't want limited series, and was there a way to make this an ongoing series? And so we said, sure. I think we wrote like five lines about it where we mentioned something about a more sentient evil being behind all of this in the Upside Down, which obviously became Vecna. And then we wrote that Will was coming back from the Upside Down, probably not feeling very well. And that's it. And then that's really all we knew going in, you know, as we were writing that final season. And so once we got into season two, we started to actually break out a larger mythology, which the Mind Flayer came in. And we, and around that time is when we started talking about the very end of the show and where we wanted it to go. So we've known, to be clear, not, we didn't know anything that was going to happen in the last season, but we knew those last, you know, 10 minutes. We knew what those were going to be. And I think that became our North Star as we moved forward. But it wasn't until we started writing season four that we realized we're going to need how much.
And we actually knew what the music was going to be.
Really?
We did. Yeah, for the final scene.
What you mean? Is it? Oh.
I can't say.
Is it a needle drop or a score, though?
I don't want to.
Oh. But I love that music informed that, that you knew that already. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Why? How did you know that?
I think it'll make sense
when
you see it.
All right, okay.
I think it'll make sense.
Is there a piece of music in the show so far then that has meant the most to you that you've been able to have in the show, whether that be a piece of score or a needle drop?
I mean, to me, it was some of the earliest music that Kyle and Michael composed, because that was when we were finding what the show was and the tone of the show. Mm. So I remember when we found what the theme song was going to be. Now, they had sent us, the way we worked, especially in season one, but we still work like this with them, because I think some of the best music we've gotten from them has been this way, which is they don't compose to the scenes.
Yeah.
I mean, they do, but first they give us a huge library of just music, sound ideas, et cetera. And one of those turned out to be the template for what the theme song was. We just go, this sounds like the show. This sounds like what we want to do the show. And then they built it out. And then the other scene, I think one of the first pieces of music that they wrote was the kids' theme. And that took a long time to figure out, but it's in the first episode after the kids play, you know, finish playing Dungeons & Dragons and they're riding their bikes or whatever. And that captured the other side of the show, which is the sort of more coming-of-age side of the show. So once we had those two themes, to me those were the two most important moments.
I would say that in the 11 theme was very early on.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting because we were working with them so early on that their music really informed what the tone of the show became, because the tone of the show shifted a little bit. And if you do look at that sizzle reel, it is the show, but it is different. And that sizzle is a little closer to how we imagine the show, which is more of a horror show and much darker. And then between the casting of the kids and Kyle and Michael, and as we were developing these scripts, it became something a little more heartfelt, you know?
Yeah. That's amazing to think. I mean, that theme, what were the conversations about, you know, the weight of having to create a theme tune for a show? But
They weren't trying to create it. That's amazing. Like they weren't. They didn't send us a bunch of music. They were like, one of these could be the themes. It was just one piece of music that they sent us among many pieces of music, which included the 11 theme. And we said, "What do you guys think? We feel like maybe that could be the theme."
But I think that's what makes it why it worked, is because it wasn't go make a theme song for this show. It was just make some music. And let's just see.
it's a very fun way to work. So we've tried to continue that, which is, you know, I don't know, before we started this season, how many hours of music they sent us, but
it was quite a lot.
But a lot, and it runs the gamut. I mean, some of it's extremely experimental to the point where it really can't go into the show. you know, is not melodic at all. And then some of it is, some of it's, you know, beautiful, and we find a place for in the show. And then there's a lot of stunning music that they've written we haven't found a place for. And maybe at some point we'll do the unreleased Stranger Things music.
It's like the DVD bonus, but for the soundtrack.
For the soundtrack.
I love that idea. Yeah. That's so cool. But it's also that idea of kind of writing themes for these characters and how those themes evolve over seasons, you know, in terms of where the characters are, both, you know, in terms of their maturity, how they grow both emotionally and physically and stuff. That's amazing to kind of have, you know, a kind of heartbeat of a piece of music, but it grow and change and morph into something different as well.
That's right. And I think that's one thing we really try to do with this final season is we just, because we've had all this collection of music, there were certain themes that we wanted to get in there and, evolve them for this season. But it helped sort of tie, you know, even if fans don't remember that piece of music, maybe subconsciously they do, maybe, and it just sort of, it ties it all together. And then if you do watch in a run, say a new audience member who, you know, who's finally old enough to see the show and they watch it from beginning to end, they're definitely gonna remember those songs, and I think they're gonna hit that much harder, and those scenes will hit that much harder.
Yeah. How's it been throughout this process of collaborating with people, you know, in terms of having different directors come in to kind of to work on the show? But, you know, you guys are the backbone to this and been through the whole thing. But collaborating and handing things over, and I get that's part of the process, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of the trust that you build with people to have their interpretation of your work and how they see things.
It's been a really positive experience for us. I mean, initially we were going to direct all the episodes, and then, if you can believe it, Ross and I fell behind on the writing, and then so Sean, who was just a producer, Sean Levy, who was just a producer at the time, our producer, volunteered to come in, save our butts, and direct two episodes, and it turned out so well that it, you know, from then on out, we thought, you know, let's have directors, because it allows Ross and I more time to write. And I mean, we've been very careful about who we bring in, but it's always been a very positive experience. And sometimes they bring something to it that is surprising and, you know, changes the show. I think the more we've worked on the show, the more we sort of embraced collaboration, not just with the directors, but with the actors and with the crew, because everybody, it's such an enormous undertaking, this show, that to try to do it alone or to try to micromanage it too much, I think is not a good idea. We do micromanage the edit and the, and the scripts, but as far as the direction go, no. And we're not like, what am I going to do? Hover over Sean Levy's shoulder? Hover over Frank Darabont's shoulder? Like, it's
you
ridiculous.
Do you.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you have a really clear idea of the whole world that you were creating, you know, in terms of, we see this amazing iconic set behind you to the creature creations and all that, you know, when you were thinking about and starting to write this world, were you very clear about how you wanted it to look? And does it still, do you still get a kick of kind of when you see that on screen and you see what you've created?
Mostly it was about picking the right people. I think we had a sense of what we wanted Hawkins to feel like, but it wasn't until, you know, we were meeting with various production designers, and then Chris Trujillo, who I had just known, I had known for years, and he had only done small indie projects, but he kept begging, because I had had dinner with him even prior to Matt and I writing this script, and I just gave him a rough pitch of what I was working on. He said, I have to do that. So when it came, when Netflix bought it, he kept bugging me. I was like, You can pitch on. I was like, they'll never let us hire this guy. And then, but his lookbook, he just put a lookbook together. And I was like, when you see it, you know. And he could articulate and visualize it so much better than us. And somehow, I don't know, Netflix let us do some crazy things back then. I mean, like hiring Kyle and Michael, who had never composed anything before,
They were selling used synthesizers, to be clear. Like that, they weren't, you don't really make money as a synth musician.
Yeah. And to hiring Chris, who had only done indie films. I mean, and again, Matt and I had no experience, so I'm not sure what was going on, but they let us do it. And I think that's more our goal. It's like, even if we can't perfectly articulate it or articulate what we want the show to look like. We do know in our heads what it is, and when we see it, we go, yes. And
but I think I would say, though, the vision that Chris had was different, probably, that was in our heads. I mean, we're not production designers. So I think, and then what he, the ideas he had, I remember, it was very grounded, I thought. You know, I think a lot of the sort of the ideas that we were getting, were it was a little bit more sort of kitschy, you know, and I thought that he was pitching this kind of wallpaper and wood paneled walls and that kind of thing. And
the nano crocheted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this was his idea. And I think taking this sort of extraordinary story in terms of dealing with the supernatural and mixing it with what is a very realistic, grounded take on what the 80s looked like, I think was really good.
I think that's part of the connection, isn't it? That you kind of, you recognize that environment. It feels
It feels real. It's not a memory. It is feel very realistic to what the 80s is and was, and it's not always the prettiest, but it feels very real. It feels very lived in.
Listen, huge congratulations, and thank you for what you've created, because it's, you know, on a personal level, it's been amazing, but also to have this thing with my 12-year-old to experience together has just been, it's been absolutely great. You've sparked his imagination so
brilliantly. Oh, awesome.
That's so great to hear.
Thanks so much. Nice to chat
with you. That was so fun. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
From the score to Stranger Things, that's 11, as referenced by Matt and Ross during our conversation, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with the Duffer Brothers.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
A huge thanks to Matt and Ross for taking the time to talk to us. I thoroughly enjoyed being in their company and getting the chance to chat to them about the show, about their experience, about music. The final season then, the first part of the final season, they've split it up into different sections, but the first part is up on Netflix now. And I can highly recommend going back and starting at the very beginning again if you fancy it. It's well worth it. Head to edithbowman.com to catch up with every single episode of Soundtrack, including my chat with composers Michael and Kyle. You can follow us on your socials, as I said, as a way of winning yourself a copy of the One Battle After Another score. Head to Soundtrackin' UK and please do subscribe to our YouTube channel, Soundtrackin' Extra. Speaking of which, you can watch Russell Tovey, Tom Blythe and Carmen Emmy discuss plainclothes in an episode that I am going to share in a podcast episode later in the week. And then on Friday, so excited to share this one with you, Noah Baumbach, George Clooney and Adam Sandler join me to discuss J. Kelly. I know, Noah Baumbach, George Clooney and actual Adam Sandler. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.